Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Allegro podcast, the podcast where you will be able to hear from your favorite runners around the world. Today I will be talking to Rishabh Prakash. Rishabh is a freshman at Cornell University. In high school he ran 4:14, 9:08, and 14:46. So far in his two seasons of collegiate running, he has run 8:23 for 3K and 30:10 for 10K. Also, be sure to check out the podcast Instagram at Allegro Podcast to be able to ask questions that you have for future guests and get updates on the latest podcast episodes. With that being said, cue the intro music. Allegro. Allegro. Hey Rishabh, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Allegro podcast. To start things off, can you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about how you got into running?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thank you for having me on the podcast. So my name is Rishabh Prakash. I am a freshman. I'm finishing my freshman year at Cornell University, and I'm originally from Burlington, Massachusetts. So my start to running was pretty traditional, honestly. I was a soccer player, as a lot of runners are. And so, like, my freshman year of high school, I played soccer. And then winter came around, and I played basketball at the time too, but I was kind of like, is this something I want to pursue? Probably not. So I'm like, hey, let's try out track. I was always like a faster kid just from soccer, and I had done like the youth track program in my town, like through my town's recreation department. So I said, hey, let's give indoor track a try. And so I did that my freshman year indoors, and I started to really like it. And I wasn't like too great starting, but I mean, I kept my head into it and got better and better. And so I ended up having like a really solid freshman year outdoors. So I decided it's time to give up soccer, and it's time to put my head fully into the sport. And yeah, it was probably one of the better decisions I've ever made. So yeah, that was my start into running.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I had a very similar start into running, like you said, soccer, then starting do youth track for a few years, and then freshman year track. Yeah. So since your freshman year to present day, what would you say is your most memorable race?
So there are two races that I would define. One, individually is one that meant most to me, and one, team wise and was sort of a big culmination of like, my whole high school career. But, I'd say number one, the first biggest race of my career is probably, New Balance Nationals outdoor my senior year. So my whole senior year campaign was just going towards a goal of, being an All-American at New Balance Nationals, which is getting a top six finish. And indoor my senior year, I thought I was really poised to finish. I had run like some really good times solo by myself at dual meets, and I thought like I'm really poised to break nine and do, you know, make some noise at indoor nationals. And unfortunately, I got sick like 2 days before my state meet, and I absolutely bonked at my state meet, and I was still had some like lingering sicknesses at New Balance indoor. And so I didn't perform how I wanted there. So outdoor was really my last chance to sort of pursue this goal that my whole senior year was devoted towards. And so I ran the 5K Friday night. I ran like a really solid time. It was a super stacked field. And so I finished, I think, in like eighth place. So like really close, but still not there. And so I had the 2 mile the day after, and I was pretty beat up from the 5K the night before, but I was like, it's my last race of high school, like, let's give it a shot. So I ran in that race, and I ended up running 9:08, and I came in third place. So I finally accomplished this goal of being an All-American, and that was probably my most memorable individual race. And another race that really stands out to me, it wasn't a race, it was a meet itself, but I had like tripled at that meet. My coach in high school was a very team-oriented guy, and like within our division and within our state in Massachusetts, my high school team was like pretty competitive as a team. And so we had this meet, we have this meet called State Relays. And my high school coach always likes to say this, it's like the most It's the real team state championship because the meet is completely relays. So you're not going to win this meet with like three or four top level multi athletes and a couple of good distance runners. You really need a whole deep team to win it, because like every race is a relay. So we going into this meet indoors my senior year, we had won the past three and our team was looking like a little bit worse than the previous years. So we were pretty like apprehensive going in. We were like, can we kind of repeat what we have done in previous years? And so we went in and we ended up winning that meet against one of our like league rivals, Wakefield. And the like a really memorable race for me was it had come down to the 4x4 and we had needed, I think we had to finish, it was within two places of Wakefield because I think we were up by like 6 points at the time going to the 4x4. But anyways, I got the baton like super far back out of the lead because all the guys who were in that 4x4 had like doubled or tripled in that meet and we were just exhausted. But I got the stick back and I managed to run a really good leg and I finished like right behind Wakefield. And so we ended up winning that meet and it was probably like the like best meet I've competed in as a team. And just to like see my teammates and see my coach being like super happy with how we performed, that was also a very memorable meet and race in general.
Nice. Yeah, team success is awesome. But I know you mentioned the New Balance 3200, the 2 mile race. And like you said, you had that 5K earlier that weekend. And you said you just missed that All-American spot. I know other people in that field, they were like, any other year you guys would have gotten it with the time you ran. But it was just this year or last year, the field was especially stacked. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. That was a crazy race. The times that the guys ran up at front and like even like I went in that race and I'm like, hey, right after the race, I was like, I gave it my best shot. I ran like 14:46, which I think at the time was like probably or it was 14:42, maybe. I'm not really sure. But at that time, I was like, that's probably as fast as I could have run anyway. So I'd given it my best effort. And it was just like that was the way that's just the way the marbles rolled. So but yeah, no, like you said, that was. Would have been an All-American in any other year, but I'll take how I ran that day. It was still a very solid race.
Yeah, definitely. So how has your mileage and your training changed throughout high school and college?
Yeah, my training in high school was still very solid, and I attribute a lot of that to my coach. He's coached a lot of great distance athletes, number one being Paul Hogan, who like ran 8:59 in high school, went on to go to UMass Lowell, and he was an All-American there, and he's running professionally with BAA now. So my high school coach knew what he was doing, but at the same time, he definitely did hold me back a little bit just in terms of mileage. So I think my like in-season mileage, more like junior, senior year, I'd probably only run like 35 to 45 miles a week in season, but a lot of those were quality, and we would do probably a lot of workouts and a lot of tempos. So it was very... I wouldn't say intense, but it was very, a lot of the training that we did, we got a lot of like bang per buck per mile that we did. And my coach emphasized a lot of speed. So we would run a lot of like repeat 400s and we had a great workout in high school called VO2s, which, so my coach, this is a really interesting workout. Basically at the beginning of the season, we'd run something called VO2 base. And, so we would run like a 6 minute time trial for distance at the like beginning of the season. And then, so we would take the distance that you ran at that time trial, divide that in half, and you had to run half that distance, five reps of that in 3 minutes. And that was like another really good workout. But yeah, just going back to mileage, it was always pretty steady in high school. I think the summer going into my senior year was my like high school mileage peak and I hit 60. Which I still think is pretty high for high school, but there are definitely high schoolers who are doing a lot more. And going into college, my coach at Cornell, Mike Henderson, he's another guy who's I feel like you'll see a lot of college coaches and they're like, oh, freshman coming in, you're going to hit 80 miles a week no matter what. I don't care about your background. You need this to be good in college. And so we're just going to throw you right in. And that's why a lot of people get injured in their freshman year of college. But I came in and I'd like, all the freshmen in my class, we were like very open with our coach in terms of like what we did in high school, and he catered our freshman year training plans and mileage in terms of what we were used to. So I did 75 miles a week at a peak going in and like going into cross country like this past fall, and I'd held that 75 mile a week peak. And I feel like that's worked really well. And I think that also, I think 75, like doing that this year, my freshman year, gives me a lot of room to just work upwards as I like hopefully can try to hit like 90 to 100 my junior and senior year. But yeah, that's pretty typical in terms of my mileage progression as to where I am currently.
All right, nice. So would you say your favorite workout is the VO2s that you did in high school?
Probably in high school, yeah. Those were my favorite workouts. I like would dread them, but at the same time, there was something like really fun about doing them. And every like the fun thing about VO2 is you could almost like treat them like a race because you would hit a mark. So I think like senior year, I had hit like 1,050 meters, so 5 reps of 1,050 meters in like 3 flat. And so if you'd hit a mark, you would move back 25 meters. So then I'd like after I'd hit 1,050, like the next week we did them, I went to like 1,075 and I failed like doing that. Like I'd missed the last 2 reps of those. And so you keep trying it. So it's like a great way to gauge progress. And I could really like tell where my fitness was at from those workouts. So I'd say my favorite workout in high school was either that or just a like solid 20-minute tempo run. I had a nice like route that I did for tempos, and tempos again are another way to like gauge fitness depending on your pace. And if you run the same route for a tempo each time and the effort feels the same, you can really like see yourself improving. So I'd say those were my two probably favorite workouts in high school.
Yeah. Do you guys do as much speed work and like speed development stuff in college, or is it more like easy runs, long runs, and like fartleks?
Yeah, college training is very, very different from high school. And I feel like since you have such a short season and such like a minimal time to develop like training wise per season in high school, I feel like a lot of training is like going just like crushing intervals on the track. Whereas in college, you're only racing like 4 or 5 times a season. So you've got a lot more time in between races to really develop your aerobic system. And so like I would, at least my freshman year, I probably didn't do a workout in like at Cornell that was like nearly as hard as anything I did in high school. And that's not a knock to say like the workouts I did in college were like useless, because they're obviously super useful and I improved quite a bit my freshman year. But in terms of speed development, we definitely do speed like quite a bit, but it's really structured in phases. So like in our first really base phase building up in the summer, the only speed we're really doing are like strides and like 1 minute on during fartleks or something. But towards the end of the season, as we're peaking and as our mileage is dropping and we're getting ready to run fast 3Ks, we'll definitely do a good amount of like repeat 400s quite fast. So, but yeah, in terms of like college training, it's definitely a lot more mileage and long-term buildup. Instead of, you know, I'm going to run crazy intervals so I can get fit really quickly so that I can run fast at this race in the season. So college is different in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just curious, how different is the terrain in Ithaca compared to like where you run in Burlington and the greater Boston area? Because I know when I visit Boston over the summers, I go to Belmont and there aren't as many trails as I imagine there are in Ithaca. So how is the difference in terms of where you run?
Yeah, it's honestly a huge difference. So like you mentioned, the trails are different, but another thing in Ithaca is that it's super hilly. So even like running roads, we get like a great amount of hills. So most of my routes at home in Burlington are like pretty flat, and there aren't really too many trails in my town, like other than the reservoir I have like pretty close to my house. So most of my mileage in high school was on roads. And so transitioning into college, we have so many trails like right in our backyard at Cornell, which is so great. I used to dread running trails. Like when I first got there, I was like, this sucks. We're running super slow. Like, what am I benefiting from this? But like a few months in, I started to just love the scenery of trails, and it really helps you keep your easy runs easy, which is like a really big philosophy that we preach at Cornell, is keeping your easy runs super easy. So the trails are like the biggest difference at Cornell compared to like Burlington, where I do most of my runs, and in general, even in Belmont, the greater Boston area. But we do have some great roads that we do workouts on, which are flat for the most part. And we also have a great trail called Black Diamond, which is runs right parallel to Cayuga Lake, where we go for a lot of long runs, which is a nice gravel surface. So Ithaca, surprisingly, like in my mind, is like a great place to train in terms of surfaces and just different running terrain.
Yeah, totally. The campus itself, the Cornell campus, has that huge slope, so you could get hills done there too.
Yeah, I know our sprinters do. The slope is it is a really steep hill, and I know a lot of our sprinters, our head track coach Adrian Durant, has our sprinters go there to do hill reps all the time. But we don't quite do hill reps there. We have like a few other spots that we go hit hills on, but there is no shortage of hills in Ithaca. Even on easy runs, you're going to find a couple of brutal hills that you just have to power up.
Yeah, how is it like dealing with the Ithaca weather? I know you're in Massachusetts, so it's not very different, but from what I've heard, Ithaca is super cold in the winters.
Yeah, I heard that. I wouldn't call it a myth, because it definitely is, but I heard that a lot going in, and I was like, I'll be good. Like, I'm used to Boston weather. But it definitely does get quite cold. But I mean, if you bundle up, we still managed. I think this past winter wasn't like the worst. I know a lot of the guys, a lot of the older guys in the team were like, this winter was like completely manageable. So I guess we got kind of lucky in that. There was only like one day this winter where it was like extremely cold, where I literally could not bear to go outside and I had to do my mileage on our indoor track. But other than that, it's been like pretty similar to Boston. We do get a lot more snow up there, but I don't know, running outside in the cold, I guess, makes you tougher is a way to look at it. So we do still try to go outside for most of our runs if it is runnable outside.
Yeah. How is it like having that indoor track, Barton, I think it's called, in your yep. School?
Yeah, it's great. And the fact that it's like right on campus and we don't have to like drive any farther out to access Barton is great. And like Barton is such a great area because it is like just our facility. And so we also even have like a nice lounge in Barton that we call the Track Center. And it just recently got renovated, which was really cool. So that's a great place that a lot of the people on the team go to in the middle of the day to like either eat lunch or get some work done. And so that's really nice. But having Barton for workouts too this indoor season was great. We do most of our workouts in lane 6. So, I mean, the turns aren't that tight in terms of like hurting your hips or anything, because lane 6, I think, I'm not sure. It's a little bit smaller than obviously 400 meters. Like the turn itself is a little bit smaller than a 400 meter track, obviously, but it's still not that bad. So doing workouts in Barton has been great. And even like an outdoor, if we didn't have an outdoor season, so I can't really comment on this that much, but if the weather is really like crappy outside in terms of wind or rain, you can always come into Barton and get your same workout done. So it's just really nice to have that facility. And we also do have a lot of home meets indoors in Barton, which are great to just, I guess, just advanced team culture. It's really nice to see like your whole entire team competing there and everyone just cheering each other on. So to have like a ton of home meets almost nearly every week at Barton during the indoor season is really, really nice too.
Yeah, definitely. Heps was at Barton this year, right?
Yeah, it was. That was the craziest meet I've ever been a part of. Everyone was like, yo, Barton Heps, it's going to be crazy. And I was like, I don't think it's going to be that crazy. But the environment was like absurd. It was probably the coolest meet I've ever been a part of, to see the whole Ivy League come to our home track and everyone there. And it was a super crazy environment. So that was a really cool meet to host. And like, it sucks that it was my freshman year. Well, it sucks and it was good, but it mainly sucks because I like scoring in an event at Heps at our home track would have been really, really cool. So I wish like if I had that opportunity in my senior year to run like my final Heps at indoor at Barton, that would have been really great. But it happened to fall, like Barton Heps happened to fall my freshman year. So, but it is what it is. But it was a really, really good meet, Heps indoors this year. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems awesome. So to shift the topic a little bit, it's undeniable that nutrition is extremely important to be a successful runner. So what do you eat like on an average day?
Yeah, Cornell dining is great for this. So like freshman year, I had like unlimited meal plans are great, and dining halls certainly treat us quite well. But in the morning, I this is like an average day in season with dining halls. So in the morning, I'd always get up, and before my morning classes, I would go to one of our dining halls, and I usually get like scrambled eggs and hash browns and a waffle. So like carbohydrates for my waffle and protein, and getting veggies from, I guess veggies, but potatoes are great. So I like, yeah, hash browns, eggs, and like a waffle is a very typical breakfast. And I was never huge into coffee into high school, but I kind of got into it in college. So I always like a nice morning cup of coffee. So that's a very typical breakfast. And for lunch, I usually like having like a sandwich of some sorts, or like a wrap or something. And for dinner, it's really whatever the dining hall has, but I really try to emphasize a good balance between carbs and protein. And I guess my diet is quite decent, but it's not like the greatest diet that like I've had any runner see. For me, it's more like just in terms of experimentation. For me, I found the best thing in terms of eating as a runner is, I know like a lot of runners we can literally like almost eat whatever we want and not put on too much weight or get out of race shape. And so for me, since like we're running so much mileage and working out and going through like a crazy stressful day as a student athlete, for me, it's more important that I'm actually eating enough as opposed to like eating like the right food. So every now and then I'll indulge in not every now and then, I'll honestly indulge kind of whenever I want or whenever I'm feeling it, which isn't the greatest thing. But I think really emphasizing eating enough as opposed to eating super, super clean, super healthy is really important. And so, yeah, that's how I'd put it. More emphasizing that you're eating enough as opposed to everything that's going into your body is clean, is how I kind of approach eating as a distance runner, which isn't the greatest philosophy. And I know it's not going to work for everyone, but that's just how I've approached it the past few years.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so not only is Cornell ranked as a top academic school, it's also, from what I've heard and from what I've seen, it has very highly ranked dining system.
It does. Cornell dining, I think, it's always like nationally in the top five, or I don't know, they really pride themselves in that, and I totally agree with their ranking. Cornell dining has been great. It is top quality food, and just it's great. It's been great, and I even like, I remember, I think I went in and I was like 120 pounds going into my freshman year. And I think I'm around like 130 now, but that's a healthy 10 pound gain. And so that just attests to how much I've been eating at Cornell and how like solid it's been. But yeah, Cornell dining is great. I love it.
Yeah. So speaking of Cornell, can you talk a little bit about the recruiting process and how you actually got to Cornell and when you started reaching out to schools?
Yeah, for sure. So I started reaching out to, well, my main philosophy going into the whole recruiting process was I want a school that I can get an elite education at while also not giving up my passion of competing at the highest level. And so I really thought the Ivy League was a great, was filled with 8 great schools that fit that sort of philosophy. So I started reaching out to schools kind of the beginning of like so right after junior year cross country, and like my times were not great at all. I'd run like I think just under 16 in cross. I'd run like 15:50 for 5K in cross, and then my track times from like sophomore year were like 4:33, and I didn't have a 2 mile. So those are like, it wasn't great times. And I'm like, hey, like what's like, let me just reach out. It's still super early. Let's like get my name on coaches' radar. So I reached out to all these schools, and actually, Coach Henderson at Cornell was kind of like the first coach at a school that I was like super, super interested in that actually like reached back to me. And I was like, why is Cornell reaching out to me? And I'm like a 4:33 miler. Like, that's kind of crazy. But so I kind of just continued to stay in contact with people like throughout my junior year indoor season. But then my junior year indoor is when I like really kind of broke out and started to hit times that were pretty recruitable. So after that year, I had run 4:20 in the mile indoors. And that's when a lot of other Ivy League schools had started to kind of respond back to me and take interest. And so I had my outdoor season, and I just continued to stay in contact with these coaches. And going into the summer, it was kind of time to narrow down official visits. And so I took all 5 of my official visits, and I was pretty narrowed down to Ivy League schools at this point. So I took visits to Cornell, Columbia, Brown, Harvard and Yale. And so I took all five of my visits, and going in, I kind of always had this, I had this kind of preemptive bias towards Cornell, because Coach Henderson was just the most receptive coach to me. And the engineering program at Cornell, which is what I'm studying, which is what I was intending to study during the recruiting process, is super highly ranked at Cornell. And I really meshed with the team super well, and their sort of training philosophy and sort of the young age of their team. We have like a super young team. So all those stuck out to me. And obviously the campus is beautiful. So that's how I ended up choosing Cornell. But just going back to recruiting in terms of a timeline, I reached out like indoor of my junior year, continued to keep in contact, and then that progressed towards scheduling official visits that summer, taking my official visits, and then I committed like mid-October before the early decision deadline on November 1st. And so like the whole recruiting process at Ivy Leagues is a little bit different, and so I can get into that if you want me to.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Ivy's actually work with something called a likely letter. And so You're not it's a little different than a lot of other schools that I've looked at. But the whole process is when you find a school that you kind of want to commit to. So it was Cornell for me. So I called Coach Henderson up and I said, like, hey, like Cornell's where I want to be. I'm ready to verbally commit if you can guarantee like a likely letter. And what a likely letter is basically when you apply early decision, it's a letter that you get and it says you will very likely be admitted to the school. And that basically says like, hey, you're in unless you like do something crazy stupid. And so the likely letter is almost, it's very similar to like the national letter of intent that you'll sign at most other schools. And so that's what I had said. And then I got my likely letter. So I verbally committed mid-October. And then I had filled out my like application, the Common App and the Cornell specific supplements. And so I'd got that in by the early decision deadline. And then I think November like 6th or so, I got my likely letter. And that's when I was able to announce that like Cornell is where I'm going and announce that to the public after I'd gotten my likely letter.
Awesome. Yeah, that's super interesting. So would you recommend even like after your sophomore year, if you're not at the times listed on the like the team websites, the recruiting standards, do you recommend still reaching out to the coaches to demonstrate your interest?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And especially if you think that those times are something like that you are targeting or that you think you can hit. There's definitely no problem at all. And I'd honestly recommend reaching out to coaches. Like there is no harm at all reaching out to coaches. And what's the worst case? You don't get a response back and you can like keep trying to reach out to them being persistent. But I definitely recommend reaching out to them and being like, hey, I'm really interested in your program. Here are the times that I've run. My training kind of looks like this. And just ask them really, what times would you like to see from me, in order to like gain significant interest from you guys. And they'll usually be, pretty open about it of what they want you to run. And so you can get a better idea. A lot of the times those recruiting standards that you see on a lot of websites are kind of like absurd, and they're a lot faster than what a lot of guys are currently running on the team and what a lot of like incoming recruits even run. So I wouldn't necessarily have those recruiting standards be your like end all be all. There are certainly people who have run slower than that who get recruited and who the team will willingly accept. But I think like just for Ivy League's a good standard to hit in terms of like making sure that you can secure a likely letter would be like 155, 156 is for the 800, 420 for the 1600, and 920 for the 3200 like at the end of your junior year. But that's obviously not like a hard standard. You can be like slightly slower or obviously faster, but I'd say that's a good benchmark to shoot for in terms of just trying to get attention from Ivy League schools.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Are you majoring in CS?
Yes, I'm majoring in CS.
Okay, yeah. So Cornell is obviously a top school, especially in computer science. So how do you balance studying at a top university, specifically in computer science, while running at a high level?
Yeah, that is something that's very difficult. And I'm still like, obviously in the learning process in terms of doing that, because like, I don't know, experience is the best thing in terms of just knowing how to balance your time. But time management is just the biggest thing in terms of being able to balance your academic course load while still being able to run at a high level. And one thing that really helps is that my freshman class, which is huge, it's like 12 kids. The majority of us are actually CS kids. So my three roommates, I was in a quad this year. All three of them were computer scientists or people majoring in CS. And like three other people in my class are also doing CS. And a great thing about the team at Cornell, which is another thing that drew me to Cornell, was that a lot of the team, I think I'd say 50% of our men's team, are in the College of Engineering. So it's great to have like older kids be able to just guide me down the path, saying like, here's some class you should take, here are some great tips. And so to have like a lot of the older guys in the team go through what we like have gone through as freshmen really helps. But time management is the biggest key. And that's obviously easier said than done. But I just think managing your time efficiently is a skill that comes from experience, and it's something that I'm still learning, but being able to manage your time efficiently is the biggest key to success at a rigorous academic institution. And a lot of the times that feels like your life is only running in school, which is great at some times, and it really sucks at other times because of how stressed you are and how sort of like two-track focused your life is. But I think slowly I've been able to like see my life as more than that and have more free time to pursue things that I like. But I feel like a lot of people say it, but like I said, again, time management is the biggest thing in terms of being able to balance your course load and run well.
Oh yeah, definitely. So do you think that the people you socialize a lot with are your teammates, or do you also have a mix of people who are not student athletes?
Yeah, absolutely. The majority of the people I socialize with are my teammates, but that was another big thing going in like my freshman year that I didn't want to do, is have my social circle be only my teammates. And while the majority of them are my teammates, I wanted to make sure to branch out and meet a lot of people who aren't my teammates either. And so like a lot of kids on my floor in my dorm are people I'm in pretty like close contact with, and a lot of people from classes and stuff. So the majority of my social circle definitely is my team, and there's no problems with that. I think on most D1 teams, most like distance runners will obviously have their closest friends and their social circle be their teammates, because you're spending like the most time with them and your roommates with them and stuff like that. But I definitely do think it's very important as a runner to, or as just a D1 athlete in general, to have friends who are outside of the team, because I think it's pretty toxic to have your life just be only school and only running. You can tend to put a lot of pressure on yourself in both areas, and it's nice to have a lot of like outside friends and outside resources to where you can put your mind to if you're feeling stressed.
Yeah, definitely. This just gets me so excited for college running and just college in general, because I'm only a sophomore right now, but yeah, I'm also interested in computer science. So yeah, I'm really excited for that in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's great that you already have this knowledge super early. Like sophomore year, I don't say I wish I got into it earlier, but I definitely do think having the knowledge about like how recruiting works and already knowing kind of what you want to specialize in and what schools you're already interested in is great, just because like the earlier the better, is people saying you're going to have a lot more time to prepare and like get in contact with coaches and just know what you're doing. So it's definitely a great thing that you're already this far ahead early, like this early.
Yeah, thank you. So now I just have some miscellaneous questions. So a few months ago, I'm pretty sure you posted about this on your story on Instagram too. There's like this all-star DMR thing going around.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
that.
So just to revisit that, I don't remember the specific like point values or whatever there was for that and like the athletes there were in that, but out of all time, any distance runner or any runner, who would you pick to be on your DMR?
Yeah, I'm on my phone right now. I just pulled up the post. So it was, yeah, I'm going to stick with what I did on my story that day. So I would, oh, never mind. You're saying all time. So obviously you got to have the world record holder on your 16.
Oh yeah, another thing. Only one world record holder.
Oh, okay. That makes it interesting. Okay. So, okay, well, the mile is the most important without a doubt. So yeah, Hisham's going on that mile. Then on my 400, I can't take Van Niekerk, but I would take Michael Norman probably. I think he's super young, great talent. I think he will eventually get that world record. So I would do Michael Norman on my 4. I'd take Hisham on my 16. My 12. Ooh, I would have said Bernard Lagat, but no, Bernard doesn't have any world records, does he?
15 or miles. So yeah, you can say Legat.
Okay, yeah, I would do Lagat on my 12, and then for my 8, I would take Donovan Brazier because I can't do Rudisha. So I would do that. I would do Lagat, Norman, Brazier, and then Elgarouge.
Okay, yeah, I'd have the same list definitely for that.
Yeah, if you could take one world record holder, I would definitely do something like that. Yeah.
But I also feel like it's important, especially since the DMR would be a race, not just a time trial, to have a good closer. Elgarouge is definitely a good closer. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, even like a good 1200 leg to get your thing let off is pretty important. But Elgarouge can close. He's proved that. He's the greatest miler of all time. So that I think that's a no-brainer that you put your world record holder on the mile leg.
Yeah. So, have you watched any running YouTubers in the past or currently?
I do. I watched. I was I think my junior year, I got really big into like Ryan Trahan when he was still a running YouTuber, and I like bought his original business, like his Neptune bottles. I remember like his big release of Neptune bottles. I bought like season 2 of those Neptune bottles, and I still have it, and I still use it a lot. And so I watched him a lot, and then he transitioned away from running, and I got like I watched Zach Levitt when he was really small, like a smaller creator too, and I still watch him occasionally. I had a lot of time in high school to just like watch a lot of YouTube. And so I watched like a ton of running YouTubers in high school, but now I have like a little less time. But I still do watch The Athlete Special quite a bit, and I like Total Running Productions a lot too. I know a lot of people watch Nick Simmons too. I don't really watch his videos. But I'd say the two biggest running YouTubers I watch are like Total Running Productions for the history of running and like good updates on and like performance evaluations, and also The Athlete Special, because like that's the day in the life of like a sub 4 miler, 3:39:15 guy, and it's cool to see that. And he's also seems just like a super chill guy. So I his videos are just genuinely entertaining. So I like watching those.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, dude, the Trahan days, those were awesome.
Those were the good old days. Yeah,
Yeah, I was still young then, but it was awesome.
I feel honored too to like I had subscribed to him when he had like less than 2K. I'd like bought his like first product, and now he's like a big entrepreneur. He even like I posted like a picture on my Instagram. It's still there, it's way down, and the caption was like just a runner in his Neptune, and I like tagged Tran in the photo, and he's like commented and liked the photo, and it was like pretty sick because now he's like super big now as a creator, so that's pretty cool, I guess. yeah
Yeah, that's crazy. We watched his growth as a YouTuber.
yeah we did. Now he's engaged and married now. I like just saw that on his channel like a week back, which is kind of crazy because he's still super young. But like yeah, we watched his growth as a person, YouTuber, which is
Yeah.
yeah, it's great.
So another question, if you could run any world record, which event would it be in?
Probably because I think I'm gonna is it running specific or can I do any event at all?
In terms of track, or what do you mean?
No, any track event at all, but like not limited to running, like it can be field also.
Ooh, I didn't think of that. Actually, can do running first, overall
Okay.
second.
Running, it would. I'd probably do. I'd say the marathon, just because. I mean, if you count sub 2, or if you count breaking 2 as the official world record, like only one human ever has done that, and that was such a landmark achievement for like all of humanity. But even then, Eliud's marathon, like his 2:01 record at Berlin, is still insane. So I would say the marathon, just because of how insane that record is, and just overall events, I would definitely do Mondo's pole vault record, because like if I could pole vault, that would be crazy. It seems like such a fun event, and just like being able to get that high on a pole, and just like seeing how high Mondo gets, and that record in general being like however old Mondo is, I think like 20 or something, which is crazy how he's the world record holder at that age. But I would do pole vault for all overall events, and I would say the marathon for just running events.
Yeah, this one was a hard one for me, but now when I think about it, because you introduced the field now. So for the field, I definitely have to go with high jump because just like jumping that high seems so fun.
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
And then for the track or like and the roads, it's between the mile or like the 15 and the marathon. I'd probably go with the mile 15 or 15.
Yeah. In terms of like the mile 15 too, I would definitely take the mile because I feel like when you talk to non-runners, like the first thing they ask you, like even if you're not a miler, is like, yeah, what's your mile time? And it's like the mile is just like that super big known distance. So if you're like a 3:43 miler, like that's pretty crazy. Like if people are like, oh, he runs the world's fastest mile, I feel like that's a lot more clout than running the world's fastest like 1500, which is almost nearly a mile, or even running the world's fastest 3K. So like I would choose the mile out of those like mid-distance events, kind of.
Yeah. Definitely. What's your ideal place to run?
Probably trails with a nice view. I started to just love the trails. They keep your easy days easy and just great scenery. So yeah, trails with a nice view or a really nice rolling hills dirt road with just like no cars and it's just completely serene. Kind of like Boulder, Colorado type roads that you see like Tin Man Elite or just these guys training in Boulder, training on just like that dirt road with nice rolling hills and a like beautiful skyline with like trees and just a beautiful sky in the background. So one of those two would be my ideal running
location. So would you say Boulder, Colorado is your ideal place to run?
Probably. Boulder would be great. Boulder seems like such a great vibe and such just like, I mean, so many pros are there. You're training at elevation, but even just as a town, Boulder seems like great. I would definitely love to go out there one day or even like spend a summer there. Hopefully on me and my teammate were talking about this, how dope it would be to like do a co-op in Boulder, be able to go out there and like train at altitude for 6 months and just get super fit while also being like a great town of Boulder and doing a co-op or something. So like if I get an internship in Boulder or something and spend a summer there, like and train there, that would be dope.
Yeah, that'd be really awesome. For me, it definitely have to be Iten, Kenya, just because the 100-person fartleks just on the dirt roads, that just seems so fun.
Yeah, that seems so fun. I would be, like, so scared about just, like, getting dropped, because it's, like, I feel like that's inevitable if you're running with the best, like, runners in the world. But, yeah, Iten, Kenya would be crazy dope to go out to. That'd be really fun. It'd be crazy too, just because of like how low key a lot of these pros are. Like you could literally see like Elliot, for example, like literally to your right, just like training on this dirt track as if he was one of these other 100 runners around him. And like, it's like, he's just like one of them and you just see him. And this is like the world's greatest marathoner. And he's like side by side next to you. And that's how these guys train. So like going to Iten would be definitely dope. I agree with you there.
Yeah. Who has been your favorite person to compete against? And this could be from high school, even youth track if you want, and even college.
Yeah. Favorite person to compete against. That's like transitioned as I've gotten kind of like better and better at running. But the first, like, I guess you could say rival that I had was this kid from Wakefield. His name is Matt Gretorex, and he runs at UMass Lowell now. And just because he was like, he was a really fast runner and he was in my league and he had always run times like, he was one grade above me. And he'd always run times like similar to me when like he was that age. And so I remember like always wanting to like be as good as he was and be able to like beat him at league meets. And so my junior year indoors, like to win my first like D4 state championship, I beat him to win that. And that was like a pretty big triumphant moment. And then obviously Massachusetts great, Ryan Osting. I had like, I wouldn't say battles because I got dusted like both times I like tried to race him, but that was he was always someone who I looked up to in terms of times I want to run or like I want to be like kind of like him and run these times. So I'd call him another like really good rival, but I don't know if you could call it a rivalry if like I yeah but I'd say those two are two good like rivalries. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to end off the podcast, one last question. What are your goals moving forward with cross country and track?
Yeah, obviously my individual goals are all going to play into team success. I think at Cornell we have a super talented young team. The majority of our team are pretty much like incoming juniors and like incoming sophomores, and we have a really good freshman class coming in. So I really think we've got a team that can do some serious damage over the next like 2 or 3 years. And so if all goes well and we have a super normal cross country season, which I'm not so sure we will at this point, given like situations and like the options that we're being given about coming back to campus in the fall. But if we do have a great, like a normal cross country season, I think our biggest goal would be to hopefully get a top three finish at HEPS, which is our like Ivy League championships. So a top three finish there and also like a top three finish at regionals would be great. I think as a team, we're like right on the brink of like breaking the ice and just knocking on the door of NCAAs. And so if it's not this coming cross country season, I think the year after is definitely our year. We're going to have like a lot of talent. And I do think like our biggest goal would be to qualify as a team for NCAAs and also win HEPS within the next 2 years. And individually, if like this cross country season, I would want to probably hopefully top 15 at HEPS would be great. Top 10 would also be absurd, which is a huge jump from how I ran at HEPS this past cross country season. I didn't really run very well, but I think top 15 or top 10 at HEPS would be great. And then getting first team all region, which would be top 25 in the Northeast region. And so obviously doing both of those things will really help the team in terms of our team goals. And times in track, I guess in track, I really want to score at HEPS. We have this thing called sashes that we do at Cornell, which is like a long tradition where if you score at a championship meet, so HEPS or IC4As, you get a sash on your uniform. And so I was very close to that indoors. I got seventh in the 3K and missed my sash by like a quarter of a second, which sucked, but I do want to hopefully get that sash, and I want to hopefully like try to run around 8:05 in the 3K and like close to 14 in the 5K, hopefully like my sophomore year. And just long-term goals, I already mentioned team-wise, we're qualifying for nationals and cross and hopefully winning HEPS and just placing high at meets in track as a team. But I also, I'd say my two like biggest running goals would be to like break 8 in the 3K and break 4 in the mile. I feel like those are two pretty equivalent standards. And so those are obviously two really big running milestones. And if I could hit those like by my senior year, that would be great. So those would be my like really long-term running goals.
Yeah, definitely. Good luck for those goals.
And just, yeah, thank you.
No problem. Thanks so much for joining this episode. Do you want to shout out your social media or like, I don't know, your Strava or something?
Yeah, for sure. I get a ton of from the team for being like a big Strava nerd. And I've recently had some like tendonitis in my foot, and so I'm playing it super conservative and just like cross training, and I've been off of running for a while. But yeah, definitely follow me on Strava. I like being a big Strava nerd, and I get a lot of homies on the team call me out for it. But follow me on Strava, just my name, Rishabh Prakash. And then definitely follow me on Instagram. It's Rishabh Prakash _. And those are two big social medias that I use. But Strava follow would be nice too, if you could hit me up on that. People listening, yeah. Strava nerd, I gotta run for those kudos. So,
all right, yeah. Everyone listening, give him kudos on his most recent activity on Strava.
Not my most recent, but give me kudos on stuff. And when I start running again, please sauce me some kudos, because you know I love having lots of kudos on my runs, and I can flex on the homies that you know I'm like kind of Strava famous. So you know, but yeah, no, so yeah.
All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you again for having me.